Model Test 17.
Section A. Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, 1 or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center. Now, let's begin with the 8 short conversations.
Question 11. What's wrong with Professor Nelson?
Oh, don't worry. If you know Nelson, then you'll know it'll pass in a few days.
What does the man mean? Question 12. Why are you now living on campus? I thought you said it would be over your dead body before you moved here.
I changed my mind. Living so close is a good change of pace from rushing around.
What does the man mean? Question 13. You mean Horace is still quite angry that you made a joke about his name?
Yes, but I couldn't help it. It was made at the spur of the moment.
What does the man mean?
Question 14.
You have been reading this computer book for quite some days. Is it so interesting?
My wife recommended it and said that I could learn a lot from it. But to tell the truth, it was not worth a hill of beans. I even found some really bad mistakes.
What can we learn from the conversation?
Question 15.
What is the matter with you? You look really upset.
I'm getting a little tired of my sister pulling a vanishing act any time there is work to be done around the house.
What does the man mean?
Question 16. Have you made up your mind?
Yes. I'll give up biology and switch to archaeology, where my interest lies.
What's the probable relationship between the two speakers?
Question 17. Mike said that he is looking for a job in the bookstore.
Really? If I remember right, he had a chance to work there, but he turned it down. I thought he did not like the job.
What can be inferred about Mike?
Question 18.
It's nice. Well-fitted kitchen, high ceilings, a tile bath, and a big drawing room. And we're a little far away from the street,
Dear, it's 7 flights up. Okay, I can get used to it, but look at the seedy, run-down neighbourhood. Would you like our kids to play here after school?
What makes the woman dissatisfied, according to the conversation?
Now you'll hear the two long conversations. Conversation 1.
Excuse me, I've been using this old book for a research project, and I noticed that a lot of pages are turning brown and becoming brittle.
Yes, unfortunately, that's a common problem with books made from wood pulp.
I suppose to make paper from wood that you have to add a lot of chemicals and acids to make it turn white.
Exactly. And it's the acid that eventually eats away the paper.
Oh, that actually makes sense. But this book's not even 75 years old, and I've seen books in museums that are hundreds of years old, and they're in fine condition.
Well, you see, books have been made from wood pulp only since the 1850s. Before that, they were mostly made from materials like animals' skins, and no chemicals were added.
It's a shame those older wood pulp books are going to fall apart someday. Is there anything that can be done to preserve them?
Currently, the only way to stop the books from decaying is to remove the binding and treat each page individually to remove the acid.
That doesn't sound very economical.
No, it isn't. It's not practical to treat a large number of books with this process. So we only try to rescue the most valuable first edition books in our collection.
Well, thanks for the explanation. I'd better get back to my project.
Good luck, and I hope the old book holds up long enough for you to finish it.
Questions 19 to 21 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 19. What are the speakers mainly discussing?
Question 20. According to the man, why do modern books decay?
Question 21. What does the man say about books published before 1850?
Conversation 2.
Good evening, Miss Malinin. Won't you sit down?
Good evening. Thank you.
Now, I noticed you left the Hotel Scandinavia in 1980, and then you had been working in a medium-sized restaurant in Finland for about 4 years. What are you now doing in England?
I'm spending a few months brushing up my English and getting to know the country better.
And you want to work in England, too? Why?
I'm keen on getting some experience abroad, and I like England and English people.
I'm the restaurant manager and head waiter, so you'd be working directly under me. You'd be responsible for bringing in the dishes from the kitchen, serving the drinks, and, if necessary, looking after the bills, so you'd be kept pretty busy.
I'm used to that. In my last position, we were busy most of the time, especially in summer.
Good. Now, is there anything you'd like to ask about the job?
Well, the usual questions. What sort of salary were you thinking of paying?
We pay our waiters £40 a week, and you would get your evening meal free.
I see.
Now, you may have wondered why I asked you here so late in the day. The fact is, I would like to see you in action, so to speak. Would you be willing to act as a waitress here this evening for half an hour or so? Our first customer will be coming in, let me see, in about 10 minutes' time.
Well, I'm free this evening otherwise.
Good. And in return, perhaps you'll have dinner with us? Now, let me show you the kitchen first. This way, please.
Questions 22 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 22. Where does the conversation take place?
Question
23. What is the relationship between the two speakers?
Question 24. Why did the man ask the woman to come here late in the day?
Where may the woman have her dinner?
Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1.
Fatigued Finns in the western city of Turku can now escape pressures at home or stress at work at a cafe catering to those who like to catnap. The brainchild of Turku's new nap cafe is Jeremy Mast, a Frenchman who has been living in Finland since 2006 and was searching for a place to rest his head a couple of years ago. He told AFP that the idea came to him in a restaurant when he felt a bit sleepy after a meal. He thought it would be very nice to have place for resting and started to think what it could be like. After finding people liked his idea, Mast opened Nap House in January after securing funding from the European Union's Youth Culture Budget. The cafe also doubles as an art gallery and an activities workshop for young people. Customers seeking sleep or relaxation are given slippers, a pillow, a blanket, and even a teddy bear before entering the blue-coloured nap room, which has beanbags and donut-shaped mattresses on the floor. Mast said a lot of different kinds of people went there: students, teenagers, working people, and a lot of mothers with babies. He added his clients sleep there for about 1.5 hours on average. Drowsy clientele can use the service for free, but some choose to make a donation to contribute to the cafe's upkeep. Now that he runs the nap house, however, Mast says he does not always have time to catch his own quick 40 winks.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 26.
How can Finns in Turku escape pressures according to the passage?
Question 27.
How did Mast get money for Nap House?
Question 28.
How long do people sleep in Nap House?
Passage 2. A recent report has shown that here in the United States, we've experienced the revolution concerning our attitudes towards the work week and weekend. Although some calendars still mark the beginning of the week, Sunday, more and more of us are coming to regard Monday as the first day of the week, with Saturday and Sunday comprising the two-day period which is thought of as the weekend. In fact, the word weekend didn't even exist in English until about the middle of the last century. In England at that time, Saturday afternoons had just been added to Sundays and holidays as a time for workers to have off from their jobs. This innovation became common in the United States in the 1920s, but as the work week shortened during the Great Depression of the 1930s, the weekend expanded to two full days, Saturday and Sunday. Some people thought this trend would continue due to increasing automation, and the work week might decrease to 4 days or even fewer. But so far, this hasn't happened. The work week seems to have stabilized at 40 hours made up of 5 days. After this commercial, I'll be back to talk to you about the idea of adding Monday to the weekend.
Questions 29 to 31 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 29. What is the speaker mainly discussing?
Question 30. According to the speaker, what is changing in the way people think about the week?
Question 31. What effect did some people think the increasing use of automation would have? Passage 3. Good morning and welcome to American Studies 101. I would like to begin this semester by discussing the region of the United States known as the Northeast. This region includes 12 states and a small area called the District of Columbia that is the home of the national government. The Northeast is a very important part of the United States, for although it covers only about 6% of the nation's geographical area, it contains approximately one-fourth of the country's population. New York, the most populous city in the United States, and several other large cities are located in this region. Why are these 12 states so important? In the first place, the Northeast was one of the first sections of the country to be settled by Europeans. Busy cities developed there when most of America was still a sparsely settled wilderness. Many crucial events in the nation's early history took place there. I'll be describing some of those events Wednesday in my second lecture. Today, the Northeast is a great manufacturing and trading region. Thousands of factories produce a wide variety of goods and provide other regions of the country with items they need. Many large manufacturing firms have their central headquarters here. Some of the country's largest banks, investment agencies, and publishing houses are found in the Northeast. Several of its cities were noted for their fine museums. Some of the country's best-known colleges and universities are also located in this region. Finally, the Northeast is the principal location for much of the country's international trade. In the heart of this region, in New York City, is the home of the United Nations.
Questions 32 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 32. When is the lecture probably given?
Question 33. What is this lecture mainly about?
Question 34. How is the Northeast described in detail?
Question 35. According to the speaker, why is the Northeast an important part of the United States today?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 36 to 43 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now, listen to the passage.
I asked successful people what the secret of their success was. I recall an early discussion with a vice president of a large oil company. "Oh, I just keep a to-do list," he said. I passed over that quickly, but little suspecting the importance of what he said. I was in another city the next day, and I had lunch with a businessman who practically owned the town. He was chairman of the gas and light company, president of five manufacturing companies, and had his hand in a dozen other enterprises. I asked him how he managed to get everything done. "Oh, that's easy," he said. "I keep a to-do list." The first thing in the morning, he told me, he would come in and list what he wanted to accomplish that day. He would arrange the items in priority. During the day, he would cross off items and add others as they occurred to him. In the evening, he would check to see how many of the items he had written down still remained undone and then give himself a score. His goal was to cross off every item. Again and again in the years since, when I have talked to successful people, the to-do list has come up. I have found that one difference between people at the top of the ladder and people at the bottom is that those at the top use a to-do list every day to make better use of their time. Those at the bottom don't.
Now the passage will be read again.
I asked successful people what the secret of their success was. I recall an early discussion with a vice president of a large oil company. "Oh, I just keep a to-do list," he said. I passed over that quickly, but little suspecting the importance of what he said. I was in another city the next day, and I had lunch with a businessman who practically owned the town. He was chairman of the gas and light company, president of five manufacturing companies, and had his hand in a dozen other enterprises. I asked him how he managed to get everything done. "Oh, that's easy," he said. "I keep a to-do list." The first thing in the morning, he told me, he would come in and list what he wanted to accomplish that day. He would arrange the items in priority. During the day, he would cross off items and add others as they occurred to him. In the evening, he would check to see how many of the items he had written down still remained undone, and then give himself a score. His goal was to cross off every item. Again and again in the years since, when I have talked to successful people, the to-do list has come up. I have found that one difference between people at the top of the ladder and people at the bottom is that those at the top use a to-do list every day to make better use of their time. Those at the bottom don't.
Now the passage will be read for the third time.
I asked successful people what the secret of their success was. I recall an early discussion with a vice president of a large oil company. "Oh, I just keep a to-do list," he said. I passed over that quickly, little suspecting the importance of what he said. I was in another city the next day, and I had lunch with a businessman who practically owned the town. He was chairman of the gas and light company, president of 5 manufacturing companies, and had his hand in a dozen other enterprises. I asked him how he managed to get everything done. "Oh, that's easy," he said. "I keep a to-do list." The first thing in the morning, he told me, he would come in and list what he wanted to accomplish that day. He would arrange the items in priority. During the day, he would cross off items and add others as they occurred to him. In the evening, he would check to see how many of the items he had written down still remained undone, and then give himself a score. His goal was to cross off every item. Again and again in the years since, when I have talked to successful people, the to-do list has come up. I have found that one difference between people at the top of the ladder and people at the bottom is that those at the top use a to-do list every day to make better use of their time. Those at the bottom don't.
This is the end of Listening Comprehension.